So the name of this talk is Suchness, Awakening to the Preciousness of Things as It Is. So all religions and spiritual practices, I would propose, have, I don't know if you'd call it one or two purposes: to relieve our suffering and to give us hope. And Buddhism is no different. And Buddhism teaches us that all we have to do is awaken to reality just as it is, and we will achieve both of these things. Our suffering will be relieved, and we will perceive things in a way that gives us solace and hope. But a lot of times, as Buddhists, we tend to emphasize the first part of that, the relieving suffering part, the letting go part, the seeing through part, the seeing things as empty part, the moral precepts part, the relieving suffering, and trying to avoid generating more suffering. And we kind of leave it unsaid that once you do that, there will be a good payoff. Once you do that, you know, there'll be a sense of peace and joy or a reason for hope. But we don't describe it a lot, as opposed to other types of religion and spiritual practice where the emphasis is a lot on the positive, on what you're looking forward to, on heaven, on the kingdom of God, on, you know, being embraced by God that loves you. And in Buddhism, it's a little bit different, right? We're just saying, wake up to reality. So sometimes we focus a lot on the relieving suffering part. But what I'm going to be talking about today, the Buddhist teaching of suchness, arose just a couple hundred years after the Buddha's death as a way to address our need for some encouragement, some descriptions of something positive. What a description of reality, this reality that we are going to be, that we're seeking to awaken to. This is, suchness is a positive way of describing it. So it's not just that we want to awaken to reality and you know, relieve suffering. We want to awaken to reality because it is good. It is beautiful. It is, there's something positive about it. So this reality that we are seeking to awaken to, as many of you are aware, there's the central teaching in Mahayana Buddhism that reality has two aspects, the relative and the absolute. And they are simultaneously true, just like a finger is a separate thing, but it's also part of a hand. The two things are not contradictory. They are simultaneously true. And that the relative aspect is our everyday life, the aspect of reality which has a sense of time, a sense of causation, a sense of good versus bad, harmful versus helpful, you know, our everyday reality. And then the absolute aspect is this truth that it all just is just as it is, that everything is empty. And I'll talk a little bit about emptiness here for a second. So the original term is shunyata. So this is from the very beginning of Buddhism. So Sanskrit, Pali, Tibetan, Chinese, Japanese, this concept has moved with Buddhism. And it's often translated as emptiness. I like Kaz Tanahashi's more recent translation as boundlessness, kind of like that. But it's pointing toward this truth about reality that in a sense, all of the distinctions we make between things and between people are imposed by our own minds. I've often talked about this as being our mental map of reality, that the discriminations are, they're useful. They have a utility in the relative realm for us to navigate and to make decisions. But there's nothing inherently real in them. So in the Thich Nhat Hanh book we've been reading recently, he does a beautiful job of talking about emptiness and talking about essentially boundlessness and kind of interdependency. He calls it interbeing. So emptiness can sound negative, but I was just having a thought this morning about it and kind of riffing on some of the imagery that Thich Nhat Hanh has offered. And it's like, there's a leaf outside my window. And that leaf is a thing. I mean, in the relative sense, there's no denying it's a thing. It's a separate leaf. You can see the boundaries of it, the edges of it. It's a real thing. But at the same time, of course, at the very same time, it is also part of a larger organism. It, even though the shrub that it's part of is dependent, it has to have leaves. It's not dependent on any particular leaf. This leaf also is composed of cells. You could say every cell, in a sense, is its own living organism, its own independent living organism. The leaf contains soil, it contains rain, all of these components. It contains elements that, you know, came out of the Big Bang and have been countless things before they were incorporated into a leaf. The leaf reflects the genetic plan that came out of the shrub that formed these cells and these chemical components into the leaf. So the leaf contains also the reality of the sun, the reality of Earth's structure, the atmosphere. So it reflects the structure of our solar system. Like if you start to explore this leaf, it is not just this individual thing. It is many things. It reflects many things. It is, as Thich Nhat Hanh would say, it has interbeing with many things. So at one moment, we may find it useful to, you know, draw a boundary around it and talk about this individual leaf. But that's, you know, kind of just for utility's sake. It's not an inherently real designation. So we seek in Buddhism to awaken to this emptiness. But there's another way to describe absolute reality besides everything's empty. Like all of these discriminations, all these independent entities are kind of just made up, right? So let go of your mental map of the world. But then what? Then what do you perceive? And this other way of describing it, tathāta, or tathāta, also similarly a term that's been around in Buddhism since the beginning, and is translated as suchness or thusness. This is what describes reality. I guess when you are able to see things as empty, when you are able to let go of your mental map of the world, this describes what it looks like. Things are such, the suchness of things. So suchness is described, as I will get into today, in very positive terms. So emptiness, to say, you know, everything's empty, does not lead to a nihilistic void. Everything is empty, and then it's revealed in its suchness. So was going to go into the Heart Sutra because that talks about emptiness, but I'll be very brief about it. So as many of you are familiar, I think when we do our chanting and we do Avalokiteshvara, when deeply practicing Prajnaparamita, the perfect wisdom, clearly saw that all five aggregates are empty and thus relieved suffering. So we try to awaken to emptiness in order to relieve suffering, because when we don't see things as empty, we get attached to them. We get stuck in delusion, and as long as if we are that leaf, we're very concerned about the well-being of that leaf. The leaf has its own, like, is it growing? Is it getting enough nutrients? Is it going to fall off? Is something going to eat it? Like, the leaf is, you know, if the leaf is focused on itself, it's very concerned about its own very brief existence. So as long as we're only seeing things from that perspective, we're naturally stressed, we're naturally worried, we're naturally defensive, we're naturally fearful. But when we can wake up to more of that larger reality, and Thich Nhat Hanh has many many images we've been talking about recently in terms of, like, you know, the wave is just water, the water's not bothered by waves coming and going. The wave might be concerned, but it returns to the water. So it's like if we can see things, not things as empty, but our ideas of things as empty of inherent existence, this leads to more freedom. This leads to being less, if the leaf can see itself as an inseparable from the rest of the universe, that when its little life ends, it in a way is not ending. But that's not all there is. So we have several regularly recited teachings that also mention suchness or thusness. So our precious mirror samadhi, which I don't think we chanted this morning. We have it on our other service, which we haven't been doing because we're only doing one service online. The precious mirror samadhi is one of two main Soto Zen chants. And it starts with, the Dharma of thusness is intimately transmitted by Buddhas and ancestors. Now you have it, preserve it well. And then on Tuesdays, when we're at the Zendos, we alternate what we recite. And we sometimes recite Faith in Mind by Master Sengson. And that says, the way is perfect like great space, without lack, without excess. If the mind does not discriminate, all dharmas are of one suchness. The essence of one suchness is profound. Unmoving, conditioned things are forgotten. Contemplate all dharmas as equal, and you return to things as they are. When the subject disappears, there can be no measuring or comparing. In the Dharma realm of true suchness, there is no other, no self. To accord with it is vitally important. Only refer to not to. In not to, all things are in unity. Nothing is excluded. So, I want to share with you that we don't tend to read this particular passage out loud, although we do recite something by Hung Zhe, Zen Master Hung Zhe, a Chinese Chan master. We don't recite this particular one, but I thought, as I was looking through this today, Hung Zhe is my favorite source of descriptions of suchness. I feel like so many, even the precious mirror samadhi and the other things we chant are often, they point to suchness, but then they're really talking about how not to get stuck in duality. So they're talking about practice, about how you open up to this reality, not necessarily describing the reality itself. Whereas I feel like Hongzhi takes the risk of trying to actually describe it or speak to it. So this is from Cultivating the Empty Field, a collection of teachings by Zen Master Hongzhi. And this is, the whole arrives in original brightness. The place of silent and serene illumination is the heavenly dome in clear autumn, shining brightly without stain, gleaming through both light and shadow. At this juncture, the whole is supreme and genuinely arrives. The clear source is enacted with spirit. The axis is wide and the energy lively. Everything apparent in the original brightness. The center is manifest and is celebrated. All the various events are consummated with yin and yang balanced and the 10,000 representations equalized. Smooth and level, magnificently peaceful, from north to south, from east to west, heaven is the same as heaven. People are the same as people, responsive with their bodies, visible in their forms, speaking the Dharma. This ability is fully actualized, extensively obliterating obstacles. That's what I want. I'm not even saying that I understand what he even means, right? I mean, this is, in many ways, is poetic. It's evocative. We don't necessarily have to look at me like the center. Now, what would be the center? What is the brightness? I mean, it makes something resonate in us and we go, yes. So I have more to say about this, but I wanted to do a 10-minute breakout and invite you to reflect on, what does this kind of positive portrayal do for your heart? How does it speak to your experience? And if you have some sense, you think you have some sense of suchness, maybe sharing some instant, some moment where you feel like you perceived it. It's very common for when this reality kind of shines through the filter of our everyday biases, we usually kind of remember it. It's often a very kind of mundane moment, but somehow something's shining through. The completeness and the perfection of things just as they are is shining through. So I am going to let go of our self-consciousness. We kind of forget about ourselves for a little bit and that, you know, become more aware as if we're, you know, the leaf or a part of everything. And perhaps they're even what has been, you know, in other contexts is called like a peak experience or something. We all have moments in our lives where everything seems not just okay, but complete, like just the way that it's supposed to be. And I think what's very significant about our practice is that is that we don't just say, yeah, sometimes you feel like that. Isn't that nice? Yeah, sometimes we have these peak experiences. And then the rest of the time, things are, you know, kind of crappy. We say, that's reality. You had a glimpse of reality. That is reality. So I personally find it encouraging. So I wanted to share with you another way of describing this, which some of you will have heard of. And this is by Shunryu Suzuki. So he's a author of Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, and a contemporary Zen teacher who brought Soto Zen from Japan to the U.S. or helped establish it in the U.S. He's the founder of San Francisco Zen Center. And he, when he gave his Dharma talks, you know, English was his second language, or who knows, maybe his third. But so he, you know, when you read when you read writings by him, they've been, you know, edited a lot. And so sometimes he had quirky ways of speaking, because he was speaking in a, you know, a language that was not native for him. But at the other time, sometimes maybe it wasn't so much a mistake as of creative use of English that. So he has a way of describing suchness as things as it is. So not things as they are, not reality as it is, but things as it is. So he explains how one of our main teaching text is called the Sandokai, or what we call the Harmony of Difference and Sameness, which we did recite today. And so this, what I'm going to be sharing, is from Suzuki's book, Branching Streams Flow in the Darkness, which is about the Sandokai. And he talks about the Sandokai, the Harmony of Difference and Sameness. And he said, San means multiplicity, many. And Do is sameness. Or identity, oneness. So there's San, Do, and then Kai, he says, and I think there's probably more definitions than this, but the definition he's calling out means to shake hands, like to make friends with, to kind of bring together. So it's the difference and the sameness and the bringing it together. So this is like the separateness, the difference of the leaf, the unity with all things in the universe being reflected in that leaf, and how both of them are true. So this is why he uses this term, things, because it's true. We're all individuals, and there's all these manifestations. Things. There are things. It's not just one big blob. It's things, but it's also a unity. So things as it is. So he says, a small mind is the mind that is under the limitation of desires, or some particular emotional covering, or the discrimination of good and bad. So for the most part, even though we think we are observing things as it is, actually we are not. Why? Because of our discrimination or our desires. The Buddhist way is to try hard to let go of this emotional discrimination of good and bad, to let go of our preferences and prejudices and see things as it is. When I say to see things as it is, what I mean is to practice hard with our desires. Not to get rid of our desires, but to take them into account. If you have a computer, you must enter all the data. This much desire, this much nourishment, this kind of color, this much weight. We must include our desires as one of the many factors in order to see things as it is. We don't always reflect on our desires. Without stopping to reflect on our selfish judgment, we say, he is good or he is bad. But someone who is bad to me is not necessarily always bad. To someone else, he may be a good person. Reflecting in this way, we can see things as it is. This is Buddha mind. So, it's always tricky when we talk about letting go of preferences and ideas and desires and all of this, because it's very easy to start thinking dualistically about it. And as long as we approach this dualistically, we're going to fail. Our mind doesn't stop generating thoughts. We're human beings. We have desires and preferences. It's just, we can't get rid of that. That is part of things as it is. We can't like, oh, I want to wake up to this really luminous, awesome, peaceful, supernatural reality that doesn't have anything to do with all this crap over here. I mean, that's, you can't exclude anything from things as it is. So I find that when, you know, on the cushion, maybe at other times, but when on the cushion, I am able to remind myself to let go of all preferences, including preferences about what I'm going to experience, how I want to feel, how I want to be. There's, which is kind of, as we were reflecting in our breakout group, I mean, there's no words for it, right? It's kind of going into a wordless realm where there is no, like Faith in Mind says, there is no self or other. And it's not, when we describe it, it can sound like some kind of amazing, you know, transcendent, far out spiritual experience, which, you know, occasionally people do have, but for the most part, it's not a dramatic thing. It's just, I like to think that this kind of default or base way of being is our natural way. And that we just generate a lot of crap that obscures it. And that most of the time we're just existing. We're just experiencing directly this. So we're actually more in touch with this most of the time than we think. But as soon as we reflect on it, then of course we generate duality and thoughts. So then there's just this, for a moment, a sense of kind of everything around me, everything in the world is a part of me, and I am a part of all of it. And this, like Hung Zhu's imagery, it has a liveliness about it. It has a sometimes described as a luminous quality, or Hung Zhu calls it brightness. It has a coming home, embracing, positive quality. So, we do want to avoid concretizing this as a thing. So, Teigen Dan Leighton wrote this book fairly recently, Just This Is It, Dongshan and the Practice of Suchness. And this is about the precious mirror samadhi, which mentions the Dharma of thusness. And he talks about how, we talk about this, oh yeah, suchness. But he goes, suchness is not a thing. And emptiness is not a thing. That these are ways things are experienced. So, yeah, I'll leave it at that for now. But I just want to leave you with, briefly, a little piece from teacher named Ashvaghosa, who lived just a few hundred years after the Buddha and wrote a short piece called Awakening of Faith in the Mahayana. And I mean, much of his stuff is, it's kind of philosophical, but he's kind of like, I'm sure he didn't come up with the idea of suchness, but he's one of the first instances we know of someone who really codified and taught this kind of as a special teaching in philosophy. So he was really big into suchness. And he said, he one of the things that he did in this text, he lays out these biased views of ordinary beings. And one of them is that people think ultimate reality, or what he calls, also known as Dharmakaya, is like empty space. But he says that's actually a concept of non-being as opposed to being, and voidness as opposed to corporeal bodies. It's empty space versus like things you can touch. So once again, we're just falling into duality, which this is about being beyond duality. So he says we need to realize emptiness is just a tool. It's just a teaching. It's just a tool to make us give up our attachments to concepts. So he says the way to correct this error is to make clear that suchness or the Dharmakaya is not simply empty, meaning not just like a void, not just nothing, but is endowed with numberless excellent qualities. He says, from the beginning, suchness in its nature is fully provided with all excellent qualities. Namely, and so this is describing, this is from the Mahayana Buddhist point of view, this is ultimate reality. It is endowed with the light of great wisdom, the qualities of illuminating the entire universe, of true cognition and the mind pure in its self nature, of eternity, bliss, true self, and purity, of refreshing coolness, immutability, and freedom. So he talks about this being imbued with these qualities. And then there's a little like Socratic dialogue with his listeners. And they say, but you said the essence of suchness is undifferentiated and devoid of all characteristics. So how can it have positive qualities? Which, you know, I mean, this is our, you know, if everything's empty, it's just like, this is my mental map of reality. And ultimately there's no differentiations. And so then how could something be positive? That seems kind of counterintuitive. Then why would the outcome actually be positive? And Ashvaghosa talks about how it's positive qualities can be inferred because we observe and we see suffering, sadness, misery, we create. So when we don't create that, then what's left must be positive. But I would say that's kind of that kind of intellectual reasoning, when this is an intellectual thing, that I would say that we can experience this directly, that we know. I mean, if you start arguing philosophy, go down a rabbit hole quickly. How do we know? How do we really know? Maybe it's all just a delusion, whatever. But then when you put your hand in some water, you can tell whether it's cold or hot. You don't have to be holding on, attached to concepts of cold and hot. That's just a direct experience. We sense light, we sense dark. It's a direct experience. So similarly, when we let go of all of our preferences and simply are present with things as it is, this is what we end up perceiving. is this kind of connectedness, this kind of luminosity. Many different ways to describe it, but I'll leave it there. We have 5 minutes left for any, not a lot of time, but any comments or questions?
Domio, could you unmute everyone? I can't unmute everyone.
I think people can unmute themselves one by one.
Okay.
If they want to speak. So yes, please go ahead and just unmute yourself if you want to say something.
That is such a mess.
Yeah, Ruthann?
Domio, could you read the last quote you read? I can't remember the author's name.
Ashvaghosha?
No, it was long. It was long, but maybe just the last bit.
So that describing suchness in positive ways?
Yes.
That the one with that it has excellent qualities, endowed with the light of great wisdom, the qualities of illuminating the entire universe, of true cognition and mind pure in its self nature, of eternity, bliss, self with a capital S, and purity, of refreshing coolness, immutability, and freedom.
Suchness is like a bright light shining off your forehead, Domio.
It is?
Oh yeah, I see it all the time.
Oh, thank you.
The light shining right off your forehead. I think that suchness is when you leave the present.
Hmm.
No. Suchness is when you don't leave the present. I'm sorry. Wow. I got that one totally backwards.
I think one of the common misperceptions of Zen, Buddhism in general, is this misunderstanding of what nothingness is. Because people interpret it as this like nihilistic thing. And like nothing is almost the same thing as everythingness in Zen and Buddhism. And I think once you can get beyond that barrier, everything starts to open up and make sense.
Yeah, I remember confessing to my teacher an unwillingness to let go, like, you know, let go of that mental map of to give up this kind of the discrimination, the sense of self. I said, you know, what will happen if I do that? It feels like, you know, everything could just fall apart. It should just be like, what would be left? Everything will be left. It doesn't depend on your mind, right? Everything will be left.
Yes, if you put it in a mathematical formula, it's like the numbers would be exponential. I mean, truly boundless.
Could I say that suchness could be, that sounded like suchness could be infinity, but I think suchness could be zero as well. You know?
And I guess I'll just wrap up by saying, you know, I mean, what does this mean to our daily practice? And I guess for me, this is, it's possible at any moment to just let go and perceive this to, at least to some degree. And it's for me a great source of strength and solace. This is and sometimes you'll hear it said in Buddhism, like you know, what we mean in like the absolute or suchness or whatever is that everything is perfect as it is. But I don't really like that term myself because perfect invites too much dualistic thinking for me. Perfect versus imperfect, and it's perfect. Like, Frank, no, it's, I look at our world and no, our world is not perfect. I don't want to use that term, but so I tend to use the term precious, that is precious just the way it is. Just like, you know, you may have a relationship with someone and they're not perfect. The relationship's not perfect, but it still can be very, very precious to you. It's valuable in its very imperfectness. So I will leave it there and just say a little closing dedication. Offer the merit of our practice together to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.